now. This is a novel which I have to give a small explanation before I start reading, because otherwise you'll be very confused. I have written a couple of novels which had female narrators. This one has half a female narrator and half a male narrator. They alternate chapters. She's called Kamiko. She's a 30-ish Japanese artist. And the previous time when I did readings around a book with a female narrator, I did the worst reading I've ever done, which was up at, I should name it, Waterstones in Hampstead, where I read from a book called Beatniks, which has a narrator called Mary, who is 22. And they did a kind of beat evening around this book with Carolyn Cassidy, who is Neil Cassidy's widow, who was, Neil Cassidy was Jack Kerouac's best mate, and he's Sal Paradiso in On the Road. And there was a guy who'd written a book about beat film as well, and showed a bit of a beat film, Pull My Daisy, it's called. And I was part of this bill. And then after I'd done my reading, explaining that I was reading as Mary, 22, rather than myself, a guy stood up at the back and said, "Why have you brought us here for this? This had nothing to do with beats. This was just the memoirs of a bald accountant." Which, of course, is the book I'll be writing under M in my alphabetical sequence. Thank you to that bastard, whoever he was. The other person in the book, the other narrator, is Skelton, who is an English guitarist, kind of session guitarist, and jazz improv guitarist in his 30s, too. So this is the start. At first, through the window, we could see nothing but the lit-up windows of houses. Then, closer to sunrise, traces of the houses themselves began to appear, and the empty fields around them. We were returning from a long weekend at Brighton with Skelton's parents. He couldn't sleep, and I didn't want to talk. It was already over between us. There had been no horrible argument. The weekend was perfectly pleasant and completely dead. Apart from us, the carriage was empty. A year before, this would have made us joke about having sex, but we did not make jokes like that any longer. I felt like a dead body and was trying to move as little as possible to preserve this. Sometimes I looked at my reflection to see how dead it was. There were more houses and fewer fields. And then there were only houses, and the fields were parks that we didn't see because they were hidden behind houses. The train stopped at London Bridge Station. It is important now that I am very precise. The time was 5:34 a.m. exactly. We heard footsteps along the platform, and then the doors beeping before they closed. Skelton was sitting with his back to the driver. I always prefer to travel forwards so I can see things coming. There were some shouts, and the train started to move. At first, it went over something like a bridge. To the right was the Cathedral of Southwark. But I was looking out of the window on the left-hand side of the carriage. Skelton was looking that way too. The next thing the train reaches, after coming off the bridge, is the glass roof of Borough Market. It is Victorian, covered in lichen, and with some of the long oblong panes cracked. I liked them very much. They were zigzag waves on a sea of green glass, and the train was a ship ploughing through them. The next thing I remember was the heart. I saw it sliding down the incline of the roof until it touched the lead guttering. As soon as I lost sight of it, the rain began to fall. Welcome to London, I thought. The date was May the 1st. I expected the train to stop. To see a heart like that, naked, was such an extraordinary thing. The train didn't stop. It was human, I said. I'm not an expert, but I knew for absolute certain. What? Skelton asked. You saw it, I said, just outside the window. It was probably just a piece of meat, he said, something from the market. On the roof, I said. Some rats must have carried it up there, he said. I didn't like to think about rats. Maybe they had, but it was still a human thing. We couldn't just leave it there for other rats to come along and eat. I said, we need to go and see. I can't, Skelton said. You know, I've got a session. A good example of why a relationship would soon have to end. You do that, I said. I will go back by myself. The train was now waiting to cross the bridge. I was impatient for the next stop. Do you think anyone else saw? Skelton asked. That's not important, I said. We saw, so we must do something. If it's what you think it was, he said, we should just call the police. The train finally started to move again. It is our responsibility, I said, and if you don't want it, it is my responsibility. We could see the waters of the Thames River, not brown and not green, but a colour. I saw, said Skelton, I saw, just like you did. The train began to slow. I picked up my weekend bag. Skelton had an old-fashioned suitcase. When the doors unlocked, I pressed the button and stepped onto the platform. Then I saw what I wanted. A train heading in the opposite direction, back to London Bridge. With my bag clutched to my chest, I ran. Skelton was behind me, slower because of his suitcase, and slower generally. We ran down the stairs, across under the tracks, and up onto the other platform. The doors began to beep, but I got there in time to climb in and hold them open with my shoulders. Skelton arrived and tried to pull them apart. He wasn't strong enough. My shoulders were hurting a lot, so I stepped back into the carriage. The doors shut the whole way. Skelton was still on the platform. Immediately, the train began to move. Skelton looked towards the driver as if he might take pity and change his mind. Then Skelton's face passed out of sight. I crossed to the other side of the compartment so I could gaze out of the window and see if I could see the heart. I felt very excited, almost as if I were going to try to save someone's life. I was disappointed when we went back over Borough Market. This train was on a different set of tracks, further away from the roofs. The gutter where the heart had fallen was out of sight. There was a window quite nearby the place, painted English green. It issued from the top floor of an old brick house. If I could find the front entrance, perhaps this would be a way up onto the roofs, down the rail tracks. I kept my eyes on the spot of the heart for as long as I could. Just before it went round the corner, I saw a large crow come down and land exactly there. Even before the carriage stopped, I was already pressing the button to open the doors, and when they did open, I got out on the platform and began to walk very quickly towards the exit. To see the crow had caused me painful anxiety about the safety of the heart. At the end of the platform was a long passage sloping down past advertisements for crime novels and other happy things. A minute later, I was crossing Borough High Street. Above my head was the bridge I had crossed twice in the past 15 minutes. By following the tracks with my eyes, I was able to see the direction I should go. Borough Market was empty. No stalls, no traders. I walked quickly through to the other side. My footsteps sounded loud in the high space. A train came past, up in the air, coming from the right direction. Hurry up, I thought. I walked down Stony Street under the rail bridge, and then the house with the green window upstairs was in front of me. It did not look very loved. In the windows, instead of curtains or blinds, were flattened cardboard boxes. I thought about calling Skelton on his cell phone, but I was more worried about the crow, so I immediately knocked on the door. No one answered. Hello, I shouted. Is somebody there? I banged hard on the door with my fist, and it opened a little. On the inside was a chain. It would be easy to reach round and unhook it. Hello, I shouted into the dark gap. I need to speak to you. I listened but could hear nothing. I reached my hand inside and felt somebody grab it. Nails went into my wrist. What I was most afraid of, although I do not know why, was that the hidden person would bite my fingers off. Hey, said an old woman's voice, very rough. Let go. No, you let go, I said. My hand came free. I pulled it out of the dark slit. The chain clicked against the wood, and the door opened on a very sad face. I am not very tall, only 150 centimetres, but the young girl in front of me was half a head shorter. There were purple circles under her eyes. "What do you want?" the girl asked. Her voice was still that of an old woman. "I need to get up onto the roofs," I pointed up to make myself clear. "I saw something on them." The girl looked to my left and right. "You alone?" "Yes," I said, "but I have a friend who may come in a minute." For a second, she looked around me, behind me. "You sure you don't want nothing else? You don't have to give me some story about the roof. What do you want?" "No," I said, "I need to get up there, quickly." She stepped back into the dark, pulling the door open. "Be quiet," she said, "don't wake them." It felt strange to climb out onto the roof I had seen from the train. I saw a crow try to take off, the heart hanging from its beak. The girl spotted it too. "No," I said. The girl jumped across to the train tracks. At first I thought she was running away, but then I realized you had to go the long way round. I got onto the tracks and ran after her. She was fast, I was faster. We went over the high bridge. My feet splashed in the spaces between sleepers as I overtook her. The crow, lifting the heart, only got about a meter into the air before the other crow attacked it. Black feathers beat against black feathers, beak trying to peck eyes, and the heart fell down. The girl showed me how to get onto the roofs of the market. I was still 10 meters away from where I needed to be. The two crows descended, both beaks caught hold of the heart. Together they took off vertically. They had seen me and were scared. I jumped and tried to grab the dangling heart. My fingers felt the touch of it, but then the crows went higher. The girl joined me. We watched helplessly as the two crows flew up and up, 5 meters, 10. Then one of the crows tried to pull away, stealing the heart from the other. It failed. Beak lost its grip. For a moment, I thought the other crow would just fly away, but the heart was too heavy for it. As it began to fall, I knew it was out beyond the edge of the roofs. I was desperate to catch it, though, so I ran without thinking. My hands were above my head when the heart fell into them. I tried to stop, and almost did, but my momentum was tipping me forwards over the edge.